Happy holidays! Greetings, my love, from wherever you're listening from. My name is Kenzie Rock, and you are listening to 12 Days of Christmas here at Care Life Podcast. This is a holiday special where yours truly interviews 12 guests for 12 days. Before we begin, remember to follow my socials on Instagram at podcastbykenzie and kenzie_rock100. We are currently also on Twitter at podcastbykenzie and kenzierock100. So this is day one, and our guest for today is an amazing man. He has written an Amazon bestseller, 126 Days 11 Minutes, where he honors the life of his late girlfriend who passed away due to stage 4 cancer. He is also the president of Insights for Life and a fitness coach. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Lawrence Indiviglia. So Larry, thank you so much for joining us today.
Opportunity to connect with you, and looking forward to our connection and our interaction here.
Thank you very much. So before we begin, how about you take us back a little bit and tell us a little bit about you, your childhood, and your family?
Sure. I had a very good upbringing. I grew up in Franklin Square, New York, which is about 25 miles east of New York City on Long Island. And I was the third of four children. My mom and dad were married for almost 40 years. And I had a very good childhood. My dad was a career artist and a very interesting man, very talented. And I graduated high school and went to the United States Naval Academy for college in Annapolis, Maryland, and was able to have a great 4 years there. And that was my entrance into the Navy as a naval officer. I did have a very great loss when the day after I graduated college, I was driving my sister, my older sister Barbara, and my aunt Teresa, who is my dad's sister, to the airport, and I got in a horrible car accident, and unfortunately, they both died in the accident, and I was only 21 years old. That was a big loss, and that was a big obstacle and challenge in my life. However, miraculously, I was not hurt, and I was able to enter the Navy. I had a good Navy career for 6 years. And I moved to San Diego. That's where I was stationed. And after 6 years in the Navy, decided to get out and get into the fitness business as a fitness professional. And I've been a coach and trainer for 32 years. I've done personal training. I've done group training. And then eventually I got into business and life coaching with the Todd Durkin Mastermind coaching, life and coaching program. Life and business coaching program. I've been doing that now for 13 years. We work with about 250 fitness professionals, and we coach leadership, business, general marketing, self-development, exercise programming, and nutrition. Anything that a fitness owner, gym owner would do and to master that. So I've had a great career. I live in a great, great city in San Diego, California. I was married 25 years. My marriage ended in divorce. I have two grown children who are in their 30s, and I have one grandchild. So I am a father, and that's some of my background of how I got to where I'm at here in San Diego and here in this profession.
Okay, so you have authored different articles and also quoted extensively in the New York Times, but today's focus is about your book, 126 Days, 11 Minutes. Could you please give us a brief summary about it?
I would be happy to, Phyllis, and thank you for asking. 126 Days and 11 Minutes, our love story, is a story about two actively aging seniors in their 60s. Myself, I was 64, and Gail, who was my late girlfriend. We met on an online dating site, and we fell madly in love. And against all odds, perhaps, because Gail was battling stage 4 breast cancer and had been when I met her, when I talked with her on the phone for the first time, she was very honest and transparent about it, and she was battling it for over 4 years. and had various surgeries, radiation, chemotherapy, but she made a powerful choice to put herself out there and to meet a man. And I happened to be somebody that connected with her deeply. We met, we had an honest and very passionate and very meaningful relationship, Phyllis, and we lived in the today. We didn't worry about the yesterdays or the tomorrows. Each day was a gift. And we both learned that it is possible and worthwhile to live with loss or to love with loss rather than never to have loved at all. And that's the backstory of the book. The book is 349 pages. It's written by day, 126 days. Half of the book is full of joy, positivity, adventure, our dating life. And the last half of the book is when the cancer came back and moved the gal's brain, and it was the last stage of her life and her dying. So there's a happy and joyous time, and there's a little bit more of a sad time in the book, and I do share both in detail.
Okay, Larry, what motivated you to write the book itself, 126 Days and 11 Minutes? Because most people have like a background motivation about why they write certain books.
Yeah, Phyllis, certainly a fair question. I never, when I met Gail, thought I'd write a book about her someday. Halfway through our relationship, she did say, boy, she was a photographer. She had written three photography books, picture books. And she said, you know, I've learned so much on this cancer journey. I think my fourth book would be My Enlightened Journey, Loving, Dancing, Loving, and Living with Stage 4 Breast Cancer. She never got a chance to write that book. And 126 Days, 11 Minutes is not a autobiography of Gail. What it is our story. It's an honoring of her life, and I was motivated to write it because I had lost a very dear friend and lover and significant other and soulmate, and in the process of knowing her and the relationship I had with her, Phyllis, I learned a lot of great lessons, and I wanted to share those lessons with the world. Because I felt it would help people. It would help people out there struggling with relationships or maybe afraid to love somebody because it's easier not to take a risk rather than to take a risk to love. And I wanted to honor Gail's life and also at the same time share the many lessons that I learned from her about loving and about living. And finally, with COVID, it gave me the time to dedicate to writing. I was able to write the book. The recollections and my journal notes, everything was fresh in my mind, and I felt an urgency to write the book because COVID gave me the time also to do it. It was kind of ironic, but it did.
Okay, Larry, so both you and Gail were in your mid-60s when you met, and most people have this perception that love has a certain age, that you can actually be too old to fall in love again. But when it comes to you and Gail, you are finding, let's say, a second love, and she was battling stage 4 cancer. What made you pursue this relationship?
Well, I was captivated, Phyllis, by Gail. She was a beautiful woman, a beautiful spirit, and she had a courage. She had a great courage about her. She says that she had learned a lot about healing, about being, about believing, about hope, and about trusting people in her walk with cancer. And she felt that, and she made a powerful choice to embrace life and not live in the shadow of cancer. She did not just want to become a number. Gail lived a colorful life. She had three marriages. She never had any children. When I met her, she had been single 17 years. And cancer perhaps stripped her of certain things in her life, but she was still intact as a woman. And she told me when she met me, the first night we met, she said, Larry, I can love as a woman, okay? I'm not an invalid. The other thing that helped me, I was more experienced. I had life experience, Phyllis. I was mature. I had also had a cancer diagnosis in 2015, 5 years ago. In fact, the same month that Gail was diagnosed stage four, I was diagnosed stage one colorectal cancer. So I know how it is in getting a cancer diagnosis. And I think that helped me give empathy and perhaps more compassion to Gail than maybe some other people would have. But make no mistake, I was captivated by her. I wanted to have a mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual relationship with a woman. Gail provided that. And I just really loved her and had to discover more about her, and I'm glad I did. It was a very...
So in addition to your love story, you were essentially an advocate for girls' medical care. What practice advice do you give to others who may find themselves in a similar situation or are already in that situation?
Yeah, you know, Phyllis, first half of 126 days, 11 minutes, I talk about the fun times, the joyous times, what we did for fun in our free time, how we spoke to each other, some of the vacations we took, things like that. And then it turned when her cancer came back, moved into her brain. And then what I learned about being an advocate is staying by somebody's side, first of all, that you love. Sometimes it's not about who you've loved the longest, but who you loved and stayed by their side. And I learned to listen, in this case, to Gail's needs. And whether, if you're an advocate, you need to ask questions of the healthcare community. You also need to listen to your loved one or the patient, because they may have needs and wants and wishes that perhaps you don't, okay? And you have to listen to those needs. You also have to be patient. And you have to do as best as you can to make sure their wishes come true, to make sure that if they want to die at home, they could die at home. Gail died in an inpatient hospice, which had 24/7 nursing care. It was an awesome place, and that worked for her based on her pain, medication needs, and how she wanted to live till her transition days, the last stage of her life. The other thing I learned, too, is you don't have to go it alone, Phyllis. People will come and be a caregiver. You just have to let them know what you're doing, okay? And the other thing I learned was how beautiful healthcare providers, people who work in the hospice, whether it's an inpatient hospice or at home, how angelic they are and how compassionate they are, and how they give loving and care, great care, to people in the last stages of their lives.
Okay, so Larry, when somebody reads your book, there's a very unique theme to it, an Argentine tango. Why was this a very important theme to be part of your book?
Yeah, you know, the cover of the book, thanks for asking, fellas. The cover of the book is actually a picture, because Gail was a professional photographer, of a tango dancing room that she took a picture of. So there's a couple of couples on the front of the book. It's a couple dancing. So it was an actual picture of tango dancing. Gail had been tango dancing for 12 years. It meant a lot to her. Tango is symbolic. The male leads, the woman follows, but it's the embrace of tango that starts it all, and the man has to provide a strong lead. And there was when Gail was going through her treatments over 4 years, she still kept tango in her life. She loved the movement. She loved the technicality of the dance. She loved the intimacy of the dance. She loved everything the dance stood for. Love, closeness, movement. And it kept her alive. She always had tango. Even when she had to go to treatments, she always came back to it. And also it extended tango to how she viewed me. She let me lead in the relationship, Phyllis. And she followed. But as a male leading, you have to lead properly. You have to lead compassionately. You have to lead romantically. You have to lead intimately so the woman responds. Because if you don't lead well, the woman will not respond to your lead well. And that's just like tango is. Gail, we used to say, tango, she resonated with tango, Phyllis, from the soles of her feet to her soul. Very, very passionate, very strong community, friends, fellow dancers who are all very supportive and who love Gail very much.
So, Larry, I understand that you have lost a lot of loved ones from your life. Besides your family, you had Gail and you lost her too. And I understand this pain because 2 years back, I also lost my grandfather, who was the closest thing I had besides my parents and my brother. And there are a lot of things that I've always wanted to tell him. But for 3 years, I've never seen him, never told him anything. Then he just passed on. So was there anything that you've never told anybody else, but you've always wanted to tell Gail or your family, but it was already too late, they're already gone?
Wow. You know, I told Gail everything. I felt I was at peace in her last days. I was able to talk with her and at least tell her how much I loved her and what she had provided for me. I was able to do that. I think she was able to do it to an extent, but then when it moved to her brain, she couldn't talk, she couldn't see. So some of that, I think, was tough for her. And everybody finds peace differently. I think if I go back to my late brother who committed suicide, my mother who died young of cancer, my oldest sister who died in the accident, certainly my dad, but he had a long life, 99 years, I was able to. I wish I could have talked to my brother more and asked him how I could have helped him more. I felt that I perhaps could have done something maybe to help him more. Maybe we all feel that way if somebody commits suicide. But in reference to Gail, I communicated with her really well, and I didn't feel that she transitioned without her knowing how I really felt about her. Yeah.
So, Larry, what do you think about your journey itself? If you just sit down and reflect on it, do you think that all the pain, the suffering, the love you had for Gail, and all these things that have happened in your life have shaped you to the person you are today?
You know, Phyllis, it has. With each loss, you have great gain. And it sounds selfish, perhaps if you're not the one dying. But I gained so much with my relationship with Gail. And each loss does prepare you for the next one. I don't look for loss, Phyllis. I don't. But after losing 3 family members tragically, but I had never lost a lover. I had never lost a wife or a spouse. So this was a whole other level, even though I only knew Gail 4 months. But I was deeply in love with her. And when I look back, it was all worth it. I feel I gained so much more. And I lost a lot in that she was gone. Gail has given me the ability to love again and also to help me after a 25-year marriage that didn't work out, that I could love again and that I could connect with a woman mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally. I wasn't so sure if I could do that after my divorce. But Gail convinced me and taught me that I could. And that is a very big gain on my own personal journey. Is it all worth it to love unconditionally and to have such a profound experience connections in life always for a reason. Some last longer than others. But my faith tells me it was worth it, and I gained so much from it.
So, Larry, personally, I understand that you are a patient advocate. And me, myself, I have family members who are cancer survivors. I have an aunt who is a full-on breast cancer survivor. Have an uncle who is still in brain tumor recovery. And I know that medical practitioners can have their shining moments and most of the times can have their worst moments. So as a patient advocate, where do you think the medical community shined, or if they perhaps failed, how do you think they could improve the experience?
Interesting question and an important one, Phyllis. They did a wonderful job, especially when Gail got sick again, to get her out of pain immediately, to diagnose her problem, what had happened and what was causing the problem. They were able to give a prognosis as to the way ahead. In Gail's particular case, there wasn't really anything they could do. They were able to compassionately communicate that to her and say, well, if there's no traditional methods of fixing or healing the problem, then hospice is an option for you, and to direct us to that area. So they're very efficient doing that. Something they didn't do well, once you have no traditional treatment left, there's no more surgery. In Gail's case with cancer, no more chemo, no more radiation. They pretty much can treat you, okay, we need to get you out of the hospital now. We need to move you on the hospice. And you could become a number. And that's where the patient advocacy comes in. You have to ask questions. Gail did not have a home to go home to die to. She did not want to die in my home. She told me that. She didn't want to put that burden on me. She says, Larry, I do not want to die in your house. And she didn't want to die in her mother's house. Her mother was 89 years old. And so a lot of times people make the assumption in the medical community that, oh, every patient has a place to go to, there's no problem. Gail had to find a place to die. It took a few days, and it took some extra effort and asking questions on what are the options. And we came up with inpatient hospice for her, a hospice home, 4 beds. But I had to ask a lot of questions, and I had to be persistent in order to get her in there. So that was a little bit difficult for us, and we didn't have a lot of help. And so that's what I could share in what I experienced.
Larry, you and Gil were so brave during this period. Gil took up the challenge and all the way till the end, and you yourself, you're right by her side. And I understand that most people don't have this kind of courage, or they just break down into nothingness when everything is over. What motivated you to move on and be there for Gail, and also be with your children right after she passed on?
Yeah, Phyllis, you know, Gail did ask me, you know, when she was in hospice dying, that she asked me to love again, that love must continue on, that I only had known her for 4 months. She didn't want me to mourn over her the rest of my life. And she wished me a happy life and that I could meet somebody else and love somebody again. And I listened to that. And like I mentioned earlier, I feel I can do that. In the process, you find out the importance of truth and how important your core values and standing in your truth and dying well to your last day with dignity, with a sense of peace on some level, mental and emotional peace. Gail did not want to die, Phyllis, but she knew she was going to. And she came to some sort of peace. I was able to help her a little bit, but I could not provide that. Everybody has to find their own peace. As long as you're not in physical pain, horrible physical pain, it's possible maybe to find some of that peace. And I think she did. And I learned a lot from her about living to the end, embracing life to the end, and dying with dignity and a sense of standing in the truth and what is important to you in your life. I think she lived a fulfilled life. I think she made a difference to her friends. And for the most part, she was able to talk, maybe not at the very end, because after the brain cancer hit, she couldn't talk anymore. But those are some of the things I'll always remember about the experience and why it was so important. And the book brings that out, to go and visit her every night for 44 straight days. That was part of being loyal and part of standing by somebody's side to the end.
Harry, you live and work in San Diego currently, and you have two kids, Joe and Lauren, and one grandson, Luca. Has there been a point in life where they asked a certain question about you or your life, and you didn't have any idea how to answer them, or you just had to lie to them so that you could just give them an answer that made sense?
Well, you know, I've always been very authentic with my children. They're very smart. And they grew up in a real good environment. My ex-wife, great mother, and we always were very honest with them. When my brother committed suicide, I told them why my brother had had a drug habit all through his life. And we told the kids, I told my kids that part of my brother's situation and problem was he had a drug problem, which ruined a lot of his life. It caused a lot of problems. He's very honest about that. We were always very honest with them about core values, about the importance of hope in life, the importance of belief and faith. And because of that, I think I answered some questions about life and loving and dying. They witnessed all three, and also when our marriage broke up. And I've always been very honest with them. And maybe they may not agree with maybe some of my answers or some of what I've done in my life, but I think they've respected it and they do on some level understand it. They don't have to agree with it, but they understand it.
So Larry, personally, I'm 19, I'm a millennial, and I've heard this question, what is love? I myself can't understand it. I'm very skeptical about it. And from your point of view, what is the meaning of love to you?
The meaning of love, you could say unconditional love, where you love somebody with no judgment, no expectations, and no conditions. You love them for who they are as a person. I like to say substance seeks substance in life. If you're a person of substance, Phyllis, you will attract a person of substance, ultimately. I believe that. Not somebody who perhaps is superficial. But Gail always used to sing this line from a song sung by the great late Nat King Cole. And I think his daughter Natalie Cole also used to sing it. And the song was called Nature Boy. And the lyric from Nature Boy was this: the greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return. So when we talk love, we talk about giving, we talk about receiving. And we must be able to do both, Phyllis, because you could be a giver. I don't know you well, but I sense you're a giver in how you talk about your family and people who are challenged, and just having a podcast, you give to people. We have to make sure we receive, because if you can't receive love, you won't have a full love experience. I think that when it comes to what is love, at least my experience between a man and a woman in a heterosexual relationship, it's the ability to be honest and truthful and to be intimate and to have romance and to mentally and physically and emotionally and spiritually be together, be one with a person, and where you each encourage and support each other to be the best person you can be. And you're better together than alone. And when you have that type of relationship and that type of respect, the other thing it requires, Phyllis, in my opinion, you must love yourself first. You must love yourself first and ought to love another. And that's very, very important to do. Accept and respect and love yourself, and you will be able to do the same for another person. And you'll feel it. And there's a chemistry. It can't be manufactured. And you'll feel it. And I did with Gail. I certainly did.
Okay, so Larry, you're the president of Hedonism Stage, right? I and the Site for Life?
Yes.
What is it about? Because I don't quite understand about it.
Yeah, Insights for Life was my first book, and instead of saying Insights, I-N-S-I-G-H-T, I trademarked it with I-N-D, which is the first three letters of my last name, Indaviglia. So it's Insights. Interesting. It's a coaching. I do life coaching and business coaching for fitness professionals. I write books under the Insights for Life brand. I still do some personal training. I've been a career fitness professional. Not too much, but still a little bit. And mostly, I help others, artists, writers, musicians, in getting some of their works to market and get it out there. And so it's very rewarding to see very creative people in the arts or in the music world to create something and then being able to get it out there and maybe make some money off of it so you can share it with other people. That's what Insights for Life does. I am active in the nonprofit area with a nonprofit called Respect and Decency, www, and I'm not trying to sell anything, Respect and Decency. And also in giving to Sharp Hospice Home Foundation, which is where Gail died. I do try to raise money for that wonderful organization. Insights for Life is about making people happier and more fulfilled, and also to be sharing other people's gifts through writing, through music, through art, and through coaching. And that's kind of what we do.
So before we end today's episode, Larry, what are the benefits that people receive from reading your love story?
I believe, Phyllis, 126 days, 11 minutes, our love story will help people take a chance on love when perhaps it's safer not to try to love somebody, especially if somebody is struggling. They don't have to be dying of cancer. But if somebody is struggling, you could still get in a relationship and really have a wonderful experience. Also, learning from the book, the power of making a choice to embrace life, as Gail did. It's never too late to fall in love at any age. It's not. And one of the things from the book is the power of healing and the power of living in your truth to the end and the power of each day. You know, Phyllis, all we really have is the day that we wake up to. I think it's morning where you're at now, and you have your today. And living in the past and living in too far into the future, you can certainly have dreams. I think that's powerful. But all we have is today. And the book is written 126 days. Each day has a title because each day was sacred and each day was a blessing to Gail and I. So I titled each day for what that day was about. What happened? What was the theme? What was the most impactful to me and Gail that day? Because that's all ultimately we had, was 126 days of them. And I think you'll find, you'll learn about love, you'll learn about treating a woman, about treating a man, and that when you have authenticity and listening and compassion and romance and hope and strength and love, wonderful things can happen. And I think if a person reads 126 Days, 11 Minutes, Our Love Story, they will be inspired and they will be uplifted. Not so much for that somebody died, but they'll remember how they lived together.
Larry, you are a person who believes there is so many beautiful souls out there who are looking to discover and experience unconditional love, and your book shows it's possible 100%. So thank you very much for being part of this episode here at Care Online.
Phyllis, thank you so much for your time. The book is available on Amazon.com, so you can get the paperback or the Kindle edition on any Amazon.com. And I appreciate your time, your support, and I hope all your listeners receive something today. It's been an honor to be on with you, and I thank you for your time. I really do.
And are you or in any social media platforms in case any of our listeners want to reach you?
I am. Facebook at Lawrence Indiviglia. That's LawrenceIndiviglia. Indiviglia at Lawrence Indiviglia. Twitter is at Larry Indsight, LarryIndsight, at Larry Indsight. And those are the two major ones that I'm on.
So thank you once again, Larry, for being part of the show. And I hope to have you on here again soon, possibly.
Phyllis, thank you so much. If there's anything else I can help you with, please reach out. I've really enjoyed our time together.
Well, we have come to the end of day one of 12 Days of Christmas here at Care Life Podcast. Our guest today was Lawrence Indiviglia, otherwise known as Larry. You should go on ahead, find his books, Insights for Life and 126 Days, 11 Minutes. He's an amazing author, an amazing dad, an amazing grandfather, and even more an amazing, amazing person in this society. I hope to see you here again tomorrow, where we'll have our second guest for day two. And if you'd like to reach out to us or reach out to Lawrence Indiviglia, our social links will be in the description down below or to the side. And also don't forget to leave a review and comment for us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, iTunes Store, YouTube, and anywhere else our podcast is available. My name is Kenzie Rock, and have yourselves an amazing, amazing week ahead. Bye.